Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 354. I'm Brian Cohen from Amazon Ad School, joined by H. Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, how are you? It's a wild news week in the world, which means, of course, in publishing, that, you know, maybe only a few things happen, which is pretty normal, but that's what we do here. We talk about the normal news.
Everything is normal.
Nothing is not. So with books, courses, etc., what are you up to these last couple of weeks?
Well, there are still seats available for the Indie Author Alignment Workshop that I'm doing. And so that is a week from this Saturday. You can go to ffs.media/January to grab a seat. We're going to dig in. We're going to really get ourselves set up for success for the year. And when we have weeks like this one, where you just don't have that much energy to spare, you will know exactly where you should put it to feel best about that. So that is kind of the goal with this alignment that I do with authors.
And I love that you're doing that, you know, regardless of the world stuff. This is, people have these plans in late December. They want to get going in January. And then it's kind of like, like life happens, the world happens. And it's like, and my...
It has been a week of testing our resolve and our resolutions. Yes.
But a lot of people are kind of out of those resolutions already. But I want to remind people that it is tough to look at the whole picture of how 2021 is going to go in a couple of weeks. I had some big goals for my business last year. And I, after January, even after March, it looked like no chance, not going to happen. And then I was able to achieve some of those goals, including like hitting certain benchmarks and royalties and hitting certain benchmarks and subscribers. And it required me to like step up my game and be a little bit lucky the last 9 months of the year. But I love that you're doing this alignment now, giving authors 11 and a quarter months to meet and exceed those goals that they have set for 2021.
And hopefully reevaluate the goals too, because most of us have goals that add no meaning to our life, really. They're just something to like fear us out of bed in the morning, you know? You know, I think about weeks like this, and it's so important to know what matters, because sometimes you get tired. I have been very tired this week for just a lot of reasons. Right. And I get to about 1 p.m., 2 p.m., and I know I don't have three more hours left in me. So I can look at my schedule and go, what can go? And I know immediately what I can bump to another day or what just was not important. And like yesterday, me thought it'd be really cool if I did that. And then today me is like, that doesn't matter.
So have you been looking in my diary?
I know. So that's, you know, I think that's just so important, not just in January, but every day of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree. Well, definitely everyone, ffs.media/January, get the seats before they evaporate in a puff of seat smoke, because that's how that works. I've got my 5-day Amazon Ad Profit Challenge is in full swing. When this podcast is released, it'll be the second video in the challenge, which is actually video number one, because there's a video zero. And that's still available. You can still jump in there. sellingforauthors.com/January. We ended up having just a hair over 7,000 registrants, which is always fun. I know when I buy a house sometime this year, I'm just going to show that to the lender. I'm just going to say, Well, money, I can't tell you about, but 7,000 authors have signed up to that. Can I have a house?
Now, listen please? To me. You've heard of guarantors. I'm about to show you something that's going to blow your mind.
Exactly. So sellingforauthors.com/January. And a fair number of people have taken us up on our special offer to get all the videos ahead of time at the Speed Pass. So adspeedpass.com gets you all of the 6 challenge videos today, which is kind of fun. People like getting things early.
Mm-hmm. You never know what tomorrow will bring.
Truth. But I know what this episode will bring, which is 3 featured patrons. I don't think I have written down the question of the week stuff, but we did have some answers. So we'll just go to the website like they did in the cave person days. First one is Monica Leonel with the 8-minute writing habit. Create a consistent writing habit that works with your busy lifestyle. Ready to establish a consistent writing habit once and for all? If you've struggled to find the time to write due to a day job, family, or an active, busy lifestyle, this book will help you clear your blocks around writing for good. That's Monica Leonel's 8-minute writing habit. I love everything Monica puts out. It's just so actionable. So go check that out for sure.
Actionable and to the point. That yes. is Monica. All right. And then we have Writing the Past, the Eagles and Dragons Publishing Guide to Researching, Writing, Publishing, and Marketing Historical Fiction and Historical Fantasy by Eagles and Dragons Publishing. Have you ever wanted to write a historical novel but don't know where to start? In this short, easy-to-understand guide, number one best-selling author and historian Adam Alexander Haviaras shares proven actionable tips and tricks that will help you to learn historical research methodologies, essential writing tips, publishing options, and proven book marketing strategies that will ensure your historical epic gets to readers and turns them into fans.
So that is Writing the Past. Definitely check that out. Number 3, Liberty Nell Pennington's book, Love Current, a rural contemporary romance book. She's protecting her home. He's hellbent on progress. Can they navigate the rapids of love? Love's Current is the tantalizing first book in the Ozark River romance series. If you like strong heroines, hunky heartthrobs, which I do, and breathtaking scenery, then you'll adore Liberty Nell Pennington's heartwarming tale. So as we've talked about, we are going to kind of renovate our Patreon going into February and March. So stay tuned for more info on that. But thank you to everyone who is a patron and has been a patron in the past. We really appreciate it.
Okay. Last week's question of the week was, what BISAC category would you want to add to the list that doesn't already exist? And do you think it would be worth the push to make it happen?
I like that. So Rebecca Marcus says she'd like to see a seasoned romance category for books featuring characters over 40. There is a good sized community. I think it's fair reason to separate the genre from conventional romance.
There we go.
That's one.
Jackie Erickson said, I'd love to see paranormal thriller or paranormal mystery in the categories. I feel like paranormal has some synonymous with paranormal romance, so I'm reluctant to use it at all for fear people will automatically assume my books are romance. Ghost fiction is about the closest thing I found as a category, but it doesn't give any clue as to the pacing and actual genre other than that ghosts will be involved. That should be a warning. Ghosts will be involved.
Ghosts will be involved in this
in
book.
Truth, I'm not sure I'd go to the trouble to push Amazon to create this category. It comes down to the worth my time issue. And I can think of about 1,000 more productive things to do in a day to move my author business forward.
Pockets McGee talks about going super, super specific, like fiction, romance, firefighters, New York City, Upper East Side, or in his case, fiction, literary, Minnesota, Southern Minnesota, 2 miles south of Dead Raccoon. Also, instead of adding a category, he'd like to rename a category that's known as Black Humor. But the genre should be renamed to maybe something like Inappropriate Laughter, suggests Pocket McGee. So, or Pockets McGee. So I don't know many people with a plural first name. My apologies, Pockets. But definitely some great answers there. I would be really interested to see if anyone does take up this quest to get their genre recognized.
Mm-hmm. I have started the wheels turning for the paranormal cozy mystery.
The wheels have creaked once mm-hmm. or twice around.
Yeah, yeah, they're very still nice. Yelling for oil can, but
okay.
But they're thinking okay. about moving.
Okay. Well, I hope that your wheels move.
Thanks.
And let's move this show along to the first tip, and I believe it is you.
And now on the Sell More Books Show, it's the tip of the week.
In bed with Amazon. Want to let your readers preview your book right there on your site? Amazon's embed feature makes it easy for potential readers to flip through the first few pages of your book outside of Amazon, says author Walter Ryan, writing for buildbookbuzz.com. The embed code, which is available on your book's Amazon sales page, works on the majority of platforms that support HTML embedding and creates a box that looks like a miniature version of your book, complete with buy and preview buttons included. Quote, the preview option lets you flip through the pages just as if you were standing in the aisles of a bookstore, says Ryan. Click the buy button and you're taken to Amazon to complete your purchase. To find this feature, look for the share buttons beneath the pricing box on either your paperback or Kindle book page. And so obviously I had to try this as soon as I saw it because I just had never thought about this.
Yeah. How did it go?
It looks great. It is amazing. That's awesome. I really wanted to see the look inside feature. And so you have, you know, it'll embed a picture of your cover. And as soon as you put look inside, it just replaces that with a page. Like if you're reading on a Kindle, like a Paperwhite or anything like that. So it's pretty cool.
That's really smart.
Oh, and one thing,
places you can have HTML, which mm-hmm. are really helpful for this. Yes. What were you going to say?
And another great thing is, as soon as you hit the embed, it automatically, if you have a Amazon affiliate account set up, it'll automatically give you the option of which one you want, like, you know, what tag you want to use for it. And so you can easily add your affiliate link all in one. I thought that
was pretty sharp.
Like,
that
yeah.
is pretty sharp for sure. And, of course, the title and the way we said it makes it sound like that game where you put embed after everything.
Mm-hmm. Like the fortune
Amazon,
cookie.
Embed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that for folks with a website, especially those getting some traffic, this absolutely makes sense. Back in the day when I had a blog that actually got traffic, I would frequently use the tools that the Amazon affiliate account give you, which are just kind of a picture of the book and a link that then takes you to Amazon. In 2011, that was enough to get book sales, which was a golden age indeed. But this is really sharp because it's the actions you most want your reader to take. And if you can just get them to just straight up do it on a web page without even having to go to Amazon, saves you all of the places they could click away.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think this is like the perfect kind of tip because it's one of those like forehead slappers. Like, oh, I had just never pressed that one button and seen where it led.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. All right. Let's go on to number two. But does it sell books? What do you need for an author platform in 2021? Asked Kirsten Oliphant. I can tell you that it's less than you might think. Ooh. An author platform is made up of all the ways you connect with readers in hopes of selling books and building superfans. There are three big areas, and the first is email. Quote, I see the most impact on sales with email. I still believe this should be the cornerstone of your platform, end quote. Next comes social media. Stick to platforms you like and where your readers are, but keep in mind that social media doesn't have a massive impact on sales. Finally, there's content strategy, things like blogging, podcasts, YouTube, longer form content, based around your brand or book. Content marketing doesn't always work well for fiction, though, especially when authors fall into the trap of writing about writing. Quote, so when it comes to platform, I'm always asking the question, does this sell more books? Does this build super fans? So this is super interesting because I think that a lot of authors get caught up in I should be doing 99 things. But here Kirsten says, oh, well, if you're just looking for sales, then just do email. Which is like, oh, so you mean I should just like run ads to build my email list and then write emails and then I'll get more sales? And it's like, well, yeah, if you do a good job with your ads, then yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh. And yeah. That's kind of what you want to happen, right? You want to say, oh, I should just do that thing then, right?
Uh-huh. It's not a simple thing to do. It is not easy to build your list. But I think that is why so many people find other easier things to do, because it makes them feel productive.
Endorphin boost.
Yeah, stuff like social media, not as productive. And I know that there are those authors out there who say, I don't have a list. I don't care. I don't do anything with my list. And they're selling a ton of books. And that's great for them. But I bet if you track back, they took some really unconventional route. Yes. And they have some sort of personality quirk that allowed them to just plow forward with one route. I mean, so you have like the routes. If you just pick something and stick with it and put 100% of your energy into it, you usually get pretty far. But if you don't know what to do, email is the thing to do.
Yeah. Right?
Just do that. Just do that at 80%. You're fine.
Absolutely. I think there are some people who are robots when it comes to writing and they can always do 10,000 words. There are people who are just so personable that any connection they make over video or whatever on social media just works.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the unicorns, and we can't base our strategy.
Just be happy for those people. That's great.
Happy for them. Oh, absolutely.
You know, you just say, that's really awesome that they were born with that, that ability.
Yes.
And I'm going to build my email list.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. All right. And number three goes to you.
All You Can Hear. Itching for another author podcast to keep you learning? Live Writers is the new site that curates podcasts for readers, authors, and publishers of all kinds, reports Jane Friedman in the Hot Sheet. Quote, launching this month, Live Writers will provide news and resources about podcasting for the book community, a forum for industry discussion, access to podcasting and audio experts, and more. The site lists dozens of podcasts already sorted into books, writing, and publishing, and are adding more all the time. The site also hosts resources for authors looking to start a podcast themselves. Live Writers is curated by David Wilk, a podcaster himself since 2008.
Always nice to kind of find a place where you could find maybe that one or two podcasts that you listen to. Maybe not listening to all of the podcasts that you could possibly listen to.
Mm-hmm. And I did see our very own Sellmore Book Show.
Hey, we made it.
Yeah.
We made it to Live Writers.
Writing. I believe we are categorized as a writing podcast.
That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
This year, we made it. All of your craft magic.
Yep. I mean, it really is useful. That curation is so helpful because you have so many shows. And then, you know, we're a show that we kind of curate. We curate from other podcasts, and now we need to be curated. The curator becomes the curated.
Yeah. The amount of content is the disease, and we are the curation. So bad. Okay. Well, let's get into number five. And I believe it is me.
It's time for the Sellmore Book Show Top 5 News. Number five.
Shake things up in 2021. For authors, 2020 might be best remembered as the year they began innovating, writes author Sandra Beckwith on Indie Reader. Once the pandemic shut things down, authors switched gears, exploring virtual readings and interviews, and getting creative to get their books in front of readers. Now authors need to carry that can-do spirit into 2021. Quote, jettison old habits and embrace new-to-you ideas, she says, giving three to help authors get the right people to read, love, and recommend their books. Start by writing books that meet traditional publishing standards. That means professional editing, professional covers for your genre, and a great story. Then explore different promotional tactics. Consider how major consumer brands handle marketing. For example, can you build goodwill with your ideal readers by showing social responsibility? Finally, get to know your readers individually. This gives you insights you can use to improve your stories so they resonate with your readers and others just like them. Some interesting tips here. I don't know if I quite get the social responsibility. What does that mean exactly?
This is something that has happened as advertisers switch their focus towards millennial consumers. Millennials don't just want a company that provides a good service. And I'm speaking in broad strokes, obviously. There are some millennials who
all millennials, all 100%.
Right? But it is a shift toward like brands like Patagonia, who are well known for sort of bucking the commercial system and saying, well, we're going to donate to wildlife preservation or conservation, and that do things with their money and support causes with the profits that they make. It has gotten a little overboard, in my opinion, because it seems like pandering, but this is something that consumers are starting to ask for. And so, you know, if you're going to convert that to indie publishing, stuff like anthologies that go towards charity, right? Mm-hmm. So now we have the social responsibility and that sort of thing. It's not just about making as much money as possible. It's about doing something larger for society. But I will say that this is going to work differently. Like if we're going to go jump into Enneagram, some Enneagram types are going to care more about this than others. There are plenty of people who couldn't care less about social responsibility. They really just do not care. It's not that they like want to, you know, to watch the world burn.
They're not the Joker.
Right. But they don't care about it as much as other things, which I think shows the importance. And she makes this point of knowing your readers and knowing what you are actually advertising with your writing and who you are crafting your brand for.
Yeah,
because it's not a one size fits all. And if you know who you're looking for, then maybe you don't need to do social responsibility.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that if you are not really catering to that demographic, then maybe it doesn't become that important. But it also comes back to something that you always like to touch on, Claire, is like, what do you care about?
Yes.
And how can you infuse what you care about into the work that you're doing so that you care about your work more? And so that's definitely an important point. Mm-hmm. Anything else in this one? I mean, obviously, writing with high standards. Do you like that comparison that a lot of authors or writers make who maybe come from traditional publishing, say, to write up to a traditional publishing standard? What do you think of that kind of comparison that seems to always be made?
I think we instinctually know what they mean by it, but I don't think that it's necessarily accurate. Of course, there are always outliers, but I don't love it, but I have used that phrase before myself to convey the meaning. And the message was received.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there are different standards in writing, right? There's you may have more typos if you only get one proofreader and you're paying them what you can afford. You may publish with more typos. But does that mean that your story isn't strong or stronger? There are plenty of traditionally published books that lack any sort of interesting story whatsoever. Right. It is the truth, right? They forget major things. We see that in blockbuster movies. They forget major elements of storytelling. You know, some people that's going to matter more to them because they're a little bit snobbish and a typo feeds into that, you know, if they find it. But of course, we all find typos in traditionally published books as well, but they're treated like you've just, you know, struck a diamond in a mine. Like, ooh, look what I found. Oh, I'm going to hold this forever. It's limited edition, right? It's not like I need to send an angry email. I need to report it on Amazon so that that person has a quality, you know, problem listed for their book. So there's just different approaches to it. I would say on the whole, because anytime you don't have as many or any gatekeepers to who can publish, you're going to have some content, some stories that are just not ready to be consumed by the public. And that's, you know, that's just part of it. Who cares? I mean, do your best. I agree that you should try and get your book to as good as you can afford to get it before you publish.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you want to do that minimum viable product, you want to approach it like that, some people are okay with that.
And some readers are okay with that.
And you can make a lot of money doing it if that's what you care about.
Exactly. And speaking about a lot of money, why don't we go on to number four?
Number four.
$27 ebook rentals per student per year. Billion-dollar book companies are ripping off public schools, reports Maria Bustillos of The New Republic. While the rest of us are buying ebooks like Fahrenheit 451, The Giver, The Diary of Anne Frank, and 1984 for $5 to $10 each, billion-dollar companies like Follett and EBSCO are renting ebooks to schools each year rather than selling the schools or the students' copies. Not only are they renting them out, but prices are 2 to 4 times the cost of buying a permanent copy. Lord of the Flies, for instance, is $27 to rent per student for just 1 year. Quote, so why not shop around for a better deal, asked Bustillos. They can't. A school district's choice of software providers locks administrators into a tangled web of agreements, training, and financial and organizational investments that publishers exploit to their advantage.
This is rife for disruption, is it not, Claire?
It is, but let me tell you, these teachers are, they are not saying, oh, well, if we have a contract with this, you know, billion-dollar company, far be it for me to, you know, get books outside of this so that my students can learn to read. Like, yeah, that's not happening.
Or a lot of teachers.
They're just going to half-price books and buying the copies. Yeah. That's what I did. I mean, my job when I was teaching was to get people to like reading. And I really did. I broke some laws to do that. Some minor copyright violations.
But were you breaking laws or were you just breaking school policy or just both?
Probably laws. The school policy was pretty much like, just get these kids interested in books. Like that was kind of the unspoken one, which is what it should be, right? The fact that anyone is trying to wring money out of schools is so unconscionable.
Right.
But it's also just ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, okay, so they're going to go buy one book and these teachers will photocopy the entire book if they have to. That is how dedicated teachers are.
Yep.
You know, you make it unusable, too expensive, they'll get it anyway. And that's not to disparage teachers. That's because teachers actually care about this and they care about their students and want their students to read. So, I mean, this is just silly. This is just another silly thing that someone's trying to pull.
In the next 5 to 10 years, I could see disruptions in both the library publishing industry and in this, you know, in the education industry, both with this and with textbooks, because it's all just so silly. Yeah. And if someone were to build up a big enough company that they could actually challenge some of these, get some of these contracts with libraries and educational institutions and say, you will save $50,000 a year just by switching over to this, and I'm not going to charge you up the nose, I'm just going to do a good job, then, and make it like simple and easy, someone's going to take over those industries. Who knows who it'll be? But I hope it's soon, because this is just mean.
I mean, yeah. And like $27 for Lord of the Flies, I wouldn't pay 27 cents for that book, honestly. But
I will say in high school, my friends and I for a school project did a reenactment and I played Piggy. I was the only one who did a British accent.
You were committed.
I was very
method committed. Acting from an early age.
So much so. anyway, let's go into hopefully a nicer number three.
Number three.
Bye-bye likes. Facebook is changing pages and likes are about to disappear, says Kirsten Oliphant of Create If Writing. But don't freak out, she says. Facebook will be keeping your follows and just be getting rid of page likes, end quote. The goal is engagement and authenticity, and it shouldn't impact you much unless you have a disproportionately high number of likes to follows. Currently, someone can like your page, say to enter your contest, or make you stop inviting them, and then immediately unfollow it, meaning they don't see your posts anyway. Quote, it shouldn't impact you, says Oliphant. Unless you grew your page likes through giveaways or inviting every person in your life to like your page, even if they don't like what you do, end quote. Ooh, that could hurt some people. Oh. Other features coming to Pages include a redesigned layout that's simpler and more intuitive, and a dedicated newsfeed designed to help you discover and join conversations. All right, so we kind of talked about Page Like a little while ago as kind of just like, it's something that is like exposure. You know, you want to get your page. You used to be able to run ads for page likes and grow your page likes, but that is like, you know, those sponsored brand ads. Sometimes it's just for getting your face out there. And now Facebook says, let's get rid of that, which is a growing sentiment to get rid of likes and to remove likes from posts, which has been coming down the pike in some of the social media, getting rid of these likes. Do you have any concerns, Claire, about getting rid of these likes?
No.
Okay. Why do you think Facebook's doing it?
I can't really begin to fathom, but I think maybe it's this idea of just trying to phase out. Like, if I'm going to be very generous with my assumptions, it's that they've realized, not just Facebook, but a lot of these websites have realized that this sort of social proof, this one-click social proof, is part of the addiction and is basically unfightable from the human brain perspective, you know? So, maybe they're getting rid of it because of that. That's why I think they should phase it out.
Yeah.
It's also meaningless. And it can be easily rigged. Whereas following, it literally is like it describes, do you want to see this content? Not have you been bribed to see this content? Because if you're just bribed and for giveaway, you don't want to follow it. You'll unfollow it later. So it's probably about relevancy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that absolutely makes sense. I think that trying to get more real. Trying to get more real out there and make sure that we know that a person who likes something actually likes it. Advertisers, it's interesting because for whatever reason, Facebook created this list of targets you can use with the ads and then kind of cut it off like 3 years ago. And they don't have that many new targets. Even if some brand has gotten millions of followers in the last 2 years, they're just not on the list. I don't know what happened there. It doesn't seem like a good system. Someone left and then like locked it, and then Facebook could never add any more again, and they couldn't figure it out. And Zuckerberg was like really embarrassed about it, but like his code was just too good, man. It was just too good. But for whatever reason, that is the case. And those were all based on liking pages, people who liked and followed these pages. And so now that that's changing, maybe this is in some kind of connection with Facebook changing some of those advertising options. It seems like it's one thing, but it's actually another thing. Who knows? Either way, it's going, gone. And if you've been buying page likes all the way, we are so sorry.
Yeah, our condolences, but don't say we didn't warn you about sharecropping.
We do say that. All right.
People can't see it, but both of us are waggling our fingers.
We're right both now. Waggling our fingers. So let's go into number two when it's you.
Number two.
Sup, Sparky. Ingram Spark is increasing their print-on-demand paperback pricing, reports Jane Friedman in the Hot Sheet newsletter. Starting March 1st, 2021, Ingram Spark's paperback print-on-demand costs in the U.S. will increase by up to 4% per cover and up to 2% per page. While black and white paperbacks make up the bulk of indie author print books, things aren't all bad. Just confusing. Jacketless hardcover prices are dropping slightly, while hardcovers with jackets are going up. If your book uses premium color pages, your prices may decrease. Unlike KDP Print, Ingram prices covers and interiors separately. So the only way to tell if your book costs will increase or decrease is to consult their pricing chart and get out your calculator. On something of a high note, Ingram Spark now offers volume discounts starting at 2% for orders between 100 and 499 copies and up to 7% for orders of more than 1,000 copies.
I can save 2%?
Yeah.
This is a coupon I need to clip. Claire, I don't use Ingram Spark, and I don't know if you ever have. Have you?
I have an account set up, and I actually need to use it. It's on my list for this month to get some.
You better do it before March.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about the 2% increase. I'm actually surprised it's not more with the demand for print on demand.
Yeah.
That we have seen. I mean, we've been covering this trend on the show that traditional publishing is going towards print on demand because they realize like, oh, this is way more like affordable.
Yeah, this is way better than what we're doing. Yeah.
Right. So the demand has increased for printing on that demand and, you know,
printing on that demand. That's good. You slid that in there.
Yeah. And 2% is, it's not nothing, but it's not much.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think that if you're planning on doing some kind of big order, maybe you do it sooner. But for the most part, these are probably changes geared toward the newer clients that Ingram Spark has who are ordering so much more than they did last year that they just kind of have to up their prices. You never like to see a price go up, but this one seems understandable.
Right. It's like in accordance with inflation, basically, at 2%. Right. So I think we'll all be okay. Brian, would you ever recommend someone, or when would you recommend someone ordering 100 or more copies of their book?
Well, I think if you were connecting up with some event that was buying them, I would potentially do it. This is usually more for speakers or influencers of some kind. I've seen folks do this kind of thing for Kickstarter. I mean, you could do a Kickstarter and have like, you know, premium hardcover and then just print them through Ingram Spark and then you're set. That would be, and then you send them out with a nice note or what have you from there. Those are cases I would see maybe them being bought, but gone are the days where you need to keep a large supply of your own books unless you are doing some kind of direct selling method. We've talked about Pierre-Alex Jonty on the program, who now sells out of his own warehouse kind of space because he does so much business every month. And so that's the unicorn again. That is not the usual circumstance. Shall we move on to number one, which I feel like you're going to relate to, Claire?
Uh-huh.
So here we go.
And now the number one top five news items.
Your goals are too hard. 80% of your goals won't last longer past mid-January, says author and coach Roland Denzel. If you want to achieve your goals as an author, how you frame them can be as important as the goals themselves. Quote, most goals don't last longer than a few weeks, says Denzel. And New Year's resolutions are perfectly susceptible to quidditch. Not to be confused with quidditch. People tend to make them too hard, too lofty, and put too much pressure on themselves. You can increase your odds by over 25% by reframing your goals as additive versus subtractive. Instead of vowing not to waste hours doom scrolling, then quitting altogether when you do, schedule the time you want to spend on social media and don't feel guilty about it. When it comes to choosing the details of your goal, ask yourself how likely on a scale of 1 to 10 you are to be able to keep it up. If it's a 7 or less, make it more achievable. Then congratulate yourself for your honesty and success. I love congratulating myself for my honesty of things I won't be able to get done. Quidditch, doom scrolling. What stuck out to you in this one, Claire?
So much of it. It's true. I mean, yes, people's resolutions stop usually by February. It's good to try, but it's also good to make sure that you are going to do those. I know one of the books we've talked about before, I think it was the Power of Habit, where there's the actual act of starting something. There's that habit. And then there's the act of actually doing that thing. So that's kind of, you know, when he talks about your goals being too lofty, like maybe you aren't going to do 35 minutes of cardiovascular exercise every day for the rest of the year, but maybe you can put your shoes on and leave the house and see what happens. So that would be sort of that if it's seven or less, make it more achievable.
That's like straight out of Atomic Habits. It's just like figuring out that habit before the habit needs to happen. And that's so helpful.
Absolutely. This is a great one. Roland's a smart guy.
I have heard this, and we're very lucky to have him helping the show. So doom scrolling.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
I definitely have done this. My friend Quinn, and kind of my captain of my ad school guard, they recommended TikTok for me. And now sometimes I am checking out what those millennials are doing over on TikTok.
TikTok ain't millennials, Brian.
Okay. The younger, what's the younger one?
Gen Z. That is all Gen Z.
There's some millennials on there. I have seen them.
Yeah, they need to let it go.
They're doing some wacky creative stuff on there. Mm-hmm. And so, and then there's dancing. And then you scroll past the dancing and then you get some other funny stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I need to really just schedule that time out so that I don't hate myself for scrolling.
Right. Yeah. Going cold turkey off social media is almost never the answer if you are actually addicted to it. Scheduling time is great. You know, schedule time for your social media, schedule time for just laying and doing nothing, schedule time for crying. That's smart too. Doom scrolling, whatever you're going to do.
What movie would you have to watch or song would you have to listen to most immediately provoke crying for you? Maybe this is the question of the week. Okay. No, it isn't.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of the last time I cried. I think I watched too much true crime to like cry. I just get angry.
Everything is just so
that's kind of my poison of choice. Yeah. I don't know. What about you, Brian? What makes you cry?
I was trying to think. The end of Finding Neverland got me. It was like Johnny Depp. Before all the craziness and Freddie Highmore. And it's just like, gets you. There's some scenes in like classic Grey's Anatomy episodes, partly in part because the writing is so good in that show. So yeah, I'm trying to think even the most recent, nothing in Bridgerton got me, although, you know, there's some saucy stuff in there.
Yeah.
That's not crying.
Didn't bring tears to your eyes. You know, actually, I take that back. All Be Gone in the Dark, the HBO special of All Be Gone in the Dark. Oh my gosh, that last episode was the waterworks. It was very intense. I haven't watched it more than once, so I don't know if I would reliably cry, but probably.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this question is just so fun. It's not related to publishing. Let's spin it.
Okay.
What work of fiction or nonfiction makes you tear up?
We're going to get a lot of The Outsiders, I feel like. Pony Boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you approve this message?
Yeah. I want to know if people have cried reading books.
Also, if you've never cried, you can tell that and we'll make you cry.
I will make you cry.
All right. So definitely go check out Claire's workshop, ffs.media/January. Go join my challenge if you have not at sellingforauthors.com/January. A lot of January stuff here. Claire, hot wisdom potato. Do you want it today or do you want to pass it?
I'll take the hot wisdom potato today.
Here you go.
Don't expect yourself to completely compartmentalize the sections of your life. There is a lot going on and it's not going to be like this forever. So you don't have to think like, oh, well, if I'm unfocused this week, I'm going to be unfocused forever. It might go on for a little while longer, the craziness. But one of the things that I tell myself, and this may or may not help people, but when stuff is just going wrong, I just tell myself, this is the bad part. Like, this is the bad part. I don't have to make this good, but the good part will come later. That kind of helps me deal with the bad parts to not try and, because sometimes, you know, you want to put a silver lining on it, but then you just don't deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. The good parts will be coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they will. It is true. It can't all be bad parts.
No, but sometimes we're in the bad parts.
Sometimes you bite into an apple and it's an avocado.
So, oh man, that's the drug-induced parts.
even though avocados are very good. So that is our show for this week. Next week, Claire will be off and we'll be joined by Quinn from my posse of ad experts. And that'll be really fun. And yeah, I'm going to miss you, Claire. Always do. You bring such great energy to the show. And
I'm not dying, Brian.
Claire, I'm going to miss you. Well, that's how sentimental I am. I miss people when they're gone for like a week.
I will say that if I do die before I come back, I expect a full episode that's just eulogy.
It's going to be a clip show. Best Claire potatoes of wisdom.
I deserve at least a clip show, okay?
Yeah, yeah. Come to my window. No, I don't know.
That's the song I get? Come on.
I was just trying to think of something quick. So
I'll put a playlist together for you and it'll really be one of those
bad song.
One of those tear jerkers.
It is not a bad song.
Everyone can cry together.
Okay, we'll get our cry list later on. All right. Well, for H. Claire Taylor, RIP, and I'm Brian Cohen. Have a great week of book selling, and we will talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy book selling.